And welcome to another edition of the LinuxQuestions.org podcast. First up, LQ updates. I'm back from Scale 4, and I have to say that it was an absolutely fantastic show. Elon, whose name I had been indeed pronouncing incorrectly in the previous podcasts, and the whole Scale crew really did an absolutely fantastic job. The speaker list, considering this was definitely one of the smaller expos, was quite impressive and included Andy Gutmans, Chris DeBona, John O'Bacon, John Terpstra, and Hans Reiser, who actually wore an LQ shirt during his talk. And as impressive as that list sounds, it's really only a partial list of the talks that I actually saw. I often had to miss things that I really wanted to see, which is pretty typical of most expos. They'll have, you know, somewhere between 2 to 5 tracks. For Scale, they had 3. And there's almost inevitably going to be some 2 super interesting talks at the same time, which did definitely happen a lot. I had to miss Mark Spencer, who did a talk about Asterisk. I also had to miss a talk from Adam about D-Trace, which I really wanted to see. I spoke about D-Trace before, after I saw the presentation at OSCON. Now, some of the talks did get fairly technical, which is always great and isn't actually typical. A lot of times the talks, especially if they're shorter ones, won't get into any kind of technical detail, which definitely wasn't the case here. Now, the atmosphere at the show is a little bit different than most of them I've been to, and I liked it quite a bit. It was a little bit more low-key, and many of the speakers and even organizers were kind of just walking around and chatting, and you got a chance to meet and talk to a lot of great people. The expo floor itself was fairly small compared to something like, say, the Linux World Conference and Expo, but was extremely energetic and included more than a couple companies that I don't think I've ever seen at any other Linux event, which is good. There was also, and this is if I counted correctly, I'm not positive that I did, but it looked like 7 lugs, which is absolutely impressive number, even though if you consider how massive of a metropolitan area SoCal is, 7 lugs is very good to see. And I think is indicative of how active Linux is in the area. I also had the chance to have a couple of drinks with quite a few of the show organizers and some of the speakers upstairs, which that was a great time too. So all in all, a fantastic show and one that I'm proud to have the Linux Questions name associated with, and definitely a conference that I will put on my list to attend next year. Although next year I hope to actually get out of the hotel and actually see LA at least for an hour. Next story, I got a ton of feedback after last week's podcast about why so many listeners aren't using a podcatcher. Now, somewhat surprisingly to me, there didn't really seem to be a common theme. Some people just don't seem to like them. Some people found that they were actually downloading too much stuff when they used a podcatcher and weren't able to listen to it all, and found that if they went to more of a manual setup, that they just downloaded what they listened to. Some people seemed to listen from work where they didn't have install privileges, and the list went on and on and on. And I do appreciate all the feedback. Like I said, I was interested to know why that was, and it's good to get feedback like that. Now, I chatted with Jono a little bit, who he's one of the Lug Radio guys, about this at Scale, and he said that he seemed to think that stats for that show were pretty similar, so it doesn't look like it's something specific to this podcast. It just goes to show that people don't always use things the way you expect them to, and it's definitely fine with us. The bottom line for me is I really don't care how you access our content, as long as you access it and keep accessing it and think it's useful to you. Now on to the news. First story I have for you is Oracle's open source shopping spree. This story starts, and actually the first couple stories I have are all related to this one. This was a Business Week article entitled Oracle's Open Source Shopping Spree. And as I said on my blog, this worries me a little bit. One thing that I think is great about open source and open source projects, and one reason that I think the projects are so successful, is that they're free to make technically correct decisions without having to worry about marketing departments, input from different departments, meetings, PHBs, and all the other things you're likely to find in a large enterprise or organization. They're simply free to innovate and do what's best for their users. Another benefit is that since most open source projects are independent from each other, we get a large amount of choice. And of course, so do they. There's not a situation, and this does happen with an enterprise, is say your vendor or one of your partners is doing something, you might not do it, not for technical reasons, but for political ones. And things like that really just don't happen often in the open source arena. This open source arena, though, in just a few short years, might look completely different than what we're seeing now if the current trend continues. And I don't think this is necessarily something that is for the better. If a handful of very large, traditional, old-school corporations end up owning the majority of successful open-source projects, I think we lose a ton of the benefits. Now, of course, there are things to be gained for the projects. Money, stability, you know, a steady paycheck, additional resources, additional talent, etc. And it is a fairly substantial list. And if the projects benefit, of course, as users, we benefit too. The price you pay for that, however, is extremely high. Basically, you lose most, if not all, control over things like direction, and you lose the ability to make those choices of being technically correct over everything else. So I know the response to this is going to be, you know, but the code is open source, so it doesn't matter, we'll never lose it. And the reality is that it does matter. If all the developers go with the sale, and NDAs certainly follow, the amount of work needed for another group of developers to get up to speed is significant, if not impossible. And like I said, that's if another group of developers as talented as the original ones are even interested, which is definitely a far from a given. And you do lose other things too. Just to take one of the more recent Oracle acquisitions as an example, right now, the way that MySQL AB makes a fair portion of their money is selling the version of MySQL under a dual license. So basically, if you want to distribute MySQL not under the GPL but with your application, you pay MySQL for the right to do so. They are in turn able to sell you that product with InnoDB in it, even though it's GPL'd, because they have a licensing agreement with InnoBase. So if Oracle changes the licensing for InnoDB not to allow that, even though the code is GPL'd, MySQL AB is obviously significantly impacted. So always having the code isn't always enough, especially depending on context. So the shopping spree original rumor included three companies, JBoss, SleepyCat, and Zend, who does PHP. The most surprising name on that list to me was JBoss, with Oracle having a directly competing project. Where would that really put the future of JBoss? I can't imagine them simply shelving their own product for JBoss. Who knows? But when Larry says things like, quote, "We're moving aggressively into open source. We are embracing it. We are not going to fight the trend. We think if we're clever, we can make it work to our advantage," end quote. That doesn't instill a whole lot of confidence to me. I'm not sure what he means by clever there. But historically speaking, I'm not sure it's going to be a good thing for us. What I'm wondering is, will the open source projects of tomorrow simply become a proving ground of sorts for a company or for a specific technology so that it can then later be swallowed up by one of the huge players? In the end, will successful open source companies like MySQL AB become a thing of the past? Now, of course, it's a great win for the corporations such as Oracle. I don't think that's to be questioned. You know, why waste money on R&D when open source will do all the work and then you can cherry pick only the choiciest of technologies and companies from there? You know, you're basically skinning the cream off the top and have to expend no real time or effort to do so, just money. But money that you already have and money that you're guaranteed to get more of because you're basically filling your stable with only proven winners. So there's not a lot to lose from their perspective. Now, I hope this isn't what the future holds, but all the current indicators make me think that it may be coming inevitable. What that means for innovation and open source in the long run, I'm not entirely sure yet. And that brings us to the next related story that I have, which part of the rumor has already come true, the SleepyCat portion. So Oracle recently announced that the acquisition of SleepyCat. So that puts MySQL AB in an unenviable position, that's for sure. Both of their viable, currently popular transactional engines are now owned by Oracle. The one thing I want to kind of comment on here is that I often see the claim that the two companies don't really compete with each other, and those two companies being Oracle and MySQL AB. I think that is clearly now squashed with Oracle owning both of the transactional backends. One has to wonder if these two acquisitions were just a competitive move against MySQL, who is starting to encroach on Oracle's low end could be a reaction to MySQL-SAP partnership, and SAP and Oracle basically now are in quite a CRM battle at the moment. And SAP's partnership with MySQL, I think, was clearly a move to try to squeeze Oracle out of getting a piece of every SAP install at the database level, which was predominantly how it was before that. Now, it could also be a play to leverage MySQL AB into an acquisition, and I'll comment on that in a minute. And of course, it could be a mix of all those and something else that I didn't cover. Now, it is of course possible that Oracle is just trying to increase the breadth of their product offerings, but past company history I don't think is indicative of that. That being said, open source does offer Oracle some compelling benefits at certain infrastructure levels. So they may just be trying to gain a large number of developers and even just some open source mindshare, and they certainly have the money to do that. Now, somewhat interestingly, at Scale, I got a chance to meet with David, who was a SleepyCat employee and was a speaker at Scale, and I got a chance to talk to him after the conference upstairs for a good half hour, 45 minutes. And I learned quite a bit both about SleepyCat as a company and about their products that I had no idea before. They're used in a whole bunch of places. When you log into Gmail, you're using a SleepyCat product. Amazon's front-ended by a SleepyCat product. Even Cisco routers have a bunch of it in there. And looking at the average Linux distribution, BDB is just all over the place. And if you're not familiar with them, they don't really compete directly in any way with MySQL AB. They're focused more on the embedded space. And it was a private company, it was a profitable company, and it was widely deployed. In addition to being the remaining transactional backend to MySQL, you have to wonder why MySQL AB didn't acquire them after the InnoBase acquisition before Oracle had the chance, and I have absolutely no idea why they didn't. After that InnoBase acquisition, it would have seemed to be a natural and logical progression for MySQL AB, you'd think. Although, you'd think MySQL AB would have acquired InnoBase before Oracle had a chance to in the first place, so who knows. So where this puts the future of BDB and InnoDB, now that they're inside Oracle, I'm not sure. But great of a technical product as MySQL is, the MySQL AB business division, if they even have one, is making me a little bit nervous at this point. So we'll have to see how MySQL AB responds to this, whether they try to work on a licensing plan with Oracle, which then means Oracle, of course, gets a piece of every MySQL sale, or whether they try to go with a transactional backend storage engine of their own, I don't think is clear yet. I have heard rumors that they're working on their own, but when I heard that rumor, part of the rumor was that it was based on BDB, so this might have shaken that plan up a little bit. Last comment on the SleepyCat bit of this is that in what I really consider a stand-up move, the CEO, I guess it would now be former CEO, of SleepyCat has posted something, I think an honest assessment of his opinion of the acquisition on the SleepyCat blog, so I do suggest that you check that out. And in a final bit to this story, it looks like Oracle did indeed attempt to acquire MySQL AB at some point. The response from MySQL AB CEO Martin Mikos was, quote, "We will be part of a larger company, but it will be called MySQL," end quote. So that kind of brings into question, were the two recent MySQL-related Oracle acquisitions really just an attempt to get MySQL AB to play ball and sell? And I think Zend fits into that accusation, if you will call it that, pretty nicely. And they were part of that rumor, since they are the P in LAMP. So if Oracle were to control both the transactional backends and probably the most popular way to access MySQL, which is PHP, it puts them in even a tougher position. So I'm sure the next couple weeks, we should get more information as things unfold and more acquisitions either happen or don't happen. We can go from rumor to truth and start seeing how it's going to play out from there. The last story I have for you is Google Windows apps coming to Linux. Now for you regular listeners of the podcast, you know this is a topic that I've covered many, many times before. This time, it seems that Picasa may soon actually be coming to Linux. Now, this isn't going to be a native port, but rather is being done via a CodeWeaver middleware layer. Basically, what this means is you probably won't need to install Wine or Crossover Office to get this to work, but that Picasa itself will be compiled against WineLib, and whether that's a custom version or the standard crossover version isn't clear. The article was a little bit light on details, so for now I am speculating a bit just to clarify that. Now, this is Google's first attempt at something like this, so they appear to be taking the path of least resistance. And realistically, in their defense, for an app like Picasa, which was first done, and this wasn't by Google, they acquired Picasa, it was done as a Windows-only app, and it looks like it relies pretty heavily on the Windows API. So in this case, a port is pretty much analogous to a complete from-scratch rewrite. Now, with Google leading the way, you have to wonder if this is the beginning of a slew of closed-source proprietary Windows applications running via a middleware layer, as opposed to real Linux ports. Now, we'll have to wait and see. But with Google's clout and the PR that they're going to generate from this, it's my guess that if this works out successfully from Linux, other companies will follow. Of course, as with many things, there's two sides to this one. On the plus side, it could be that we're going to get some really badly needed applications running on Linux. And one of the biggest complaints you'll hear about Linux is that some applications that people use just aren't there. And you'll get to do so without the trouble of having to install Wine or purchase Crossover Office, or without the overhead of something like VMware, which basically boots a full Windows install inside of your Linux install. So there's the pros. Now, on the flip side, is a middleware layer that's tied to the Windows 32 API really the way that we want to accomplish this? And I'm not sure of that, and I'm sure that depends. The answer to that depends on who you ask. Also of note in the story, it mentions that a native Linux version of Google Talk should be coming soon also, which is probably why Google recently hired Sean, who's the main game developer, a couple months back. So it looks like they're taking one app, doing it natively, one app, doing it via the crossover middleware layer. My guess is they're going to see how both of those work out, and then make future decisions from there. But kudos to them for getting into this, finally doing it. They have confirmed it from my understanding. So moving forward, it looks like you should be able to enjoy all your Google apps on Linux, whether it be natively or via a middleware layer. That remains to be seen. That is all I have for now, but thanks for listening.